Let's turn on. By that, I mean the power of the mind.
Power of the mind. Power of the mind.
Join your hands behind your head and just think. I give you love and a rainbow. I bring you sparkling sunlight on a green leaf. The golden sun calls you to battle your way out of the silk which surrounds you. Fight until you create a whole new cocoon.
We'll need to talk about the presentation.
Yeah, I was just reading on the Wikipedia page the development section of that article. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Let's just start.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you want to dust off your intro there?
Hi everybody, and welcome to the Bookhouse Boys. I'm Matt Howell.
I'm Jason Farrell.
I'm Dave Aloisi.
And thank you for joining us for a special episode. We got back together to talk about Harper Lee's second published book, Go Set a Watchman, which set the literary world on fire when the announcement was made last year that this had been found and was going to be published. And I read it. Actually, I listened to Reese Witherspoon read it to me. I was really busy this week, so I did the audiobook.
Procrastination.
Yeah, no, it wasn't really. Well, yes, it was. Well, no, I don't know.
It was, and then it was. Didn't have time.
Yeah. I'm no Dave. I don't read like really
like
fast.
Grease Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So before we start,
yeah,
can we just go around the horn and everybody just kind of, you know, briefly, just kind of give us, you know, your impressions or whatever, what the To Kill a Mockingbird means to you.
Is this anybody's first time listening to this, by the way? I don't know, out there. It's kind of,
yeah.
That would be weird, but it's possible because people will search for the title, you know, they'll search for it and they might actually stumble across it. So in the event that this is the first time you've listened to this podcast, we don't really do this podcast anymore, but we did it for 3 years and over 100 episodes. And it's pretty much like this, or just general episodes talking about what we are reading and so on. And it can still be found on the internet at archive.org if you search for Bookhouse Boys, and then a little bit at our Podomatic page if you search for the same name, in case this doesn't completely suck, which it more than likely will because we're way out of practice.
What Jason's trying to tell you folks out there is that this isn't our first hate meeting, okay? We've been around and we've done this a bit.
Yeah.
Matt is the designated hate speech person. I'm just here to make sure. Hey,
he's holding down the southern representation. He's
you
gonna...
asked to speak, Matt. That's why we're letting you.
He'll vouch for the reasonable details, and I don't know why.
Jason is in the balcony.
What a man
asked
to speak.
In horror.
Unless it's a woman or the person whose fate we're apparently deciding. Did we let him?
Okay, so yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, your impressions of To Kill a Mockingbird or what it means to you and your, you know, being as a reader or a viewer, in the case of Gregory Peck.
Yeah.
Okay.
For me, I read it in school. I think it was assigned. Absolutely loved it. Saw the film. Absolutely loved it. I think I read it again, like in my early 20s or mid 20s, and loved it. And it's just one of, you know, I rank it pretty high in my American 20th century novels. I know that people say it's overrated, or some people do, but I still hold it in pretty high esteem.
Yeah, well, I'll let Dave go first, but then I'll.
Sure. Yeah, it's a classic. I don't really have the same complicated, if you want to call it that, feelings about that one that I do about this. Though it's not, it's a bit of its time, but I think it holds up. Yeah.
I did not read To Kill a Mockingbird until fairly late in life. It was never assigned to me in school. So I was an adult by the time I read it. I liked it. It didn't hold any particular special place for me ahead or alongside like my favorite books, but I thought it was good. And as far as it being overrated, I was just going to say that, of course, it's overrated because things are called overrated in proportion to how many people rate them.
All right.
So this book is sometimes referred to as no less than like the greatest novel in American literature and things like that. So as long as you disagree with that, like if you think it's the second greatest novel in American literature history, then you think it's overrated. Yeah. So it's not really that damning a accusation, in my opinion. It's a good book. It's
too fun to read to be the best book.
It's too fun to read. It is not agonizing to get through. No, yeah, her writing style is pretty smooth and easy to digest.
Yep.
But it does tackle some pretty heady themes, and obviously we'll get into that, because it will come up in this book. And it is
I think that one does
felt ahead of its time. I think that's one of the reasons why it's so beloved is it did show some things that. It was written, in the 50s? Is that right?
It was published in 1960. It was the first draft. The book that we're talking about today was written in 1957. Written around 1957. And then there was a back and forth that went on with her editor for a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
And then To Kill a Mockingbird was published in 1960. Sorry, Dave.
Yeah, the story is, I've heard it told, is... that she submitted this one, and then her editor kind of said, all the stuff where she's a kid is the most interesting, so why don't you write a book about that?
Mm-hmm.
And that she then went back, rewrote it, put all of Jean Louise's, I guess, or who became Scout, all of her points of view onto Atticus and let that be. And so it became a very different novel, and it became sort of different characters, so these are really sort of parallel universe type
Wait,
things more than it being a direct sequel.
Can you clarify what you just said about putting Jean Louise's feelings onto Atticus?
Like her attributes, character traits.
In which
yeah,
book?
Sort of. In To Kill a Mockingbird, where she puts more of her point of view onto Atticus, even though it refers back to the trial that happens in To Kill a Mockingbird, that Atticus is much more. That's where it comes through.
Like in
Ghost Set of Watchmen, Jean Louise says a lot of things.
I don't know if this is the place to talk about it, but I have a real strong feeling about that, about this, about the apparent inconsistency in Atticus. But I don't know if we want to get into that right away. What do you think, Matt?
I guess I don't know how much I want to get into that just because I haven't read To Kill a Mockingbird in like 20 years. So I'm not going to be able to come up with
point by point
analysis or anything like that. All I know is that's apparently the story of how it was done. And I guess we should talk about the context of it because the book as it's published, and this is sort of where I have a problem, is that I don't even know if that's true. That's just sort of what I saw. Could be apocryphally kicking around the internet. None of that's in this book to give it any sort of context. So all I can look at it is as a direct sequel to Kill a Mockingbird, or as we said, since it was written before, kind of not really a prequel.
I find it fascinating to think of. Well, give us Harper Lee's actual
her word that she refers to it as is the parent of To Kill a Mockingbird.
Parent of To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah, so
I find it really interesting to just imagine she writes this book, and this book is essentially about, it's about a lot of things, but if I can distill one of the main points out of it is that treating your parents as heroes. And maybe not as completely as human beings, mm-hmm. but as the parts of them that we see and admire and want to emulate. And becoming our own person, breaking away from our parents, and that it's okay to be kind of two separate people, and that our parents become, they've got faults, they've got good points, they don't necessarily live up to our childhood expectations of them. And she kind of comes to peace a little bit at the very end of the book with that, but it causes her a lot of anxiety. And to be asked then to go back and write about Jean-Louise as a child, and then she's written a book in which Atticus is made human, let's just say. We'll get into more about what that actually is in the book. And then to go back and then write it from Scout's perspective, the hero worship and seeing him operate and do what he does in To Kill a Mockingbird that contributes to her considering him to be such a hero, and to kind of separate that out as a writer and not kind of give clues as to what later happens or aspects of his character. I don't know. It's interesting to me. It's almost like she had to forget what she did in a sense.
Interesting. Okay. I feel like one of the other interesting aspects of this, there was a lot of back and forth between the editor and Harper Lee, and people thought it was interesting to note that the editor was also, at the time she was working with Lee on the finished manuscript, was writing a biography about a social progressive. So they think that maybe the editor had a lot of influence on the reshaping of this. And I didn't even think of it that way, like you were saying, Jason. Like, maybe this is, like, Atticus, I guess, To Kill a Mockingbird is all the childhood view with all of its flaws and all of its, you know, lenses and filters of childhood. I just thought that she realized, or that her editor helped her realize, this blows. Nobody wants this downer guy. So make him, you know, and the editor came from like a Quaker background. So she was some progressive blah, blah. So I don't know. I just thought it was like just saying, this doesn't work. This character doesn't work. But when you put it the way you did, I guess it makes more sense that it's just her seeing it through childhood lenses.
Well, I don't think those are mutually exclusive. I think that could all factor in. If she was, I mean, this book, I think it probably, it's hard for me to separate, but I think this book probably was more interesting to me knowing To Kill a Mockingbird than it would be if I just read this in a vacuum. Because this book really is just about her relationship with her father. And I suppose also her, you know, wannabe fiance and so on. Her hometown. It's also about her town and what that symbolizes. But the first book is a coming of age story. And a coming of age story is a much more, you know, time tested and heavily mined literary field. You know what I mean?
Well, when you say first book, which one?
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, okay.
The first one that came published. Out 50 okay. years ago, 50 years before, or whatever.
Because this is kind of a coming of age in a weird way. Like,
it still is. It's
smashing the idols.
Yeah. I mean, age. You're right. Yeah. You're right. But it's a little more. It's all in dialogue. It's all in. You know, To Kill a Mockingbird had more of an adventure element to it. You know, the mystery of who is Boo Radley, and it might have. It does feel maybe. I can imagine an agent saying that would be more commercially appealing to show this kid and what it's like to be a kid growing up in this situation. I don't know. It's hard. That kind of stuff is going to remain speculation to some extent for us. But
quick question, Dave, as we go along with that, is except for the childhood parts, and even to an extent the childhood parts, did this feel to you guys a lot like a play?
Yeah. Yeah,
I sort of thought of it that way.
Less of almost, the childhood parts, like you.
Yeah, yeah. Like if you had extracted those, which might be why the agent asked her to extract those and say this is more like a novel, and the rest of this reads like a play that's been turned into a novel.
A little bit, but definitely like the whole ending of the book definitely did.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why I can kind of imagine that Atticus's lack of progressiveness or whatever aside, any of that stuff. I can still see an agent saying, you know, I don't know if this is really page turning material.
Yeah. My dinner with racist Andre. So I was going to say, that's kind of just jumping off what you're saying, Dave. Like what worked for you guys in this? Like what was the most successful elements of this?
I really liked the sense of place. That was, you know, and until that goes away at the end of the book, that was really strong for me. I thought she portrayed this town with just fantastic details. It felt like a place to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember, it's been too long since I've read To Kill a Mockingbird to know if that was similarly strong in that book. But I definitely got it here, and not just when she, I mean, in both time periods, in her adult time period and also then when she flashed back to being a kid. In fact, I think I got it a little more strongly when she was an adult, because the parts where she goes back to being a kid were sometimes a little too cutesy for my tastes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that was one of the strongest parts for me.
I really liked the themes of it. The themes themselves, not necessarily the execution of them in the end, teeth grinding, I thought more interesting to me, particularly as an adult. Like I still think To Kill a Mockingbird would be a great, you know, novel to read in high school. I don't know how much, because of all the hero worship in it, it would resonate with me now, other than to say, yeah, right on, I agree with all the things you're saying. So I thought the themes were fantastic, and I thought that they resonated even more sort of today, and with the modern dialogue that's happening, because they're just sort of intergenerational, aren't they? They're just leaving old towns, leaving old ideas behind, and what that can sort of mean. That's the Facebook generation right there, you know. Everybody's got the racist uncle or, you know, whatever, who you just sort of like, I love you, I guess, and but I'm not going to follow all the dumb shit you post, and how you're going to vote for Trump, and, you know, all that kind of crap. And so you just sort of unfollow them, but you feel guilty about it because you're like, oh, now how am I going to find out if, you know, somebody's sick, who's coming to the barbecue, you know, whatever. Like, it really sort of resonated with me in a lot of ways. Whether it's family or whether it's just place, you know?
Yeah.
And I found it interesting that part of it was excised from, I understand why, if there was never an intention to publish this as well, why she just sort of said, okay, let's take that part out of it, and make it more about, you know, just the idea that I was trying to get across in the first place.
I'm sorry, what was taken out? I don't understand what you're saying.
That theme that we were just talking about of throwing off your idols and all of that.
It was taken out of what?
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Instead,
I mean, she's still a kid.
Well, yeah, but he's saying that the whole adult view of your parents or your idols and realizing them as human was completely excised because she's just a child and the published original.
Oh, well, okay. I don't know if I'd call that excise. I mean, maybe she intended to follow it up with this book. And
I don't think she did, because she didn't for like 50 years.
I know, but didn't that have a lot to do with the reaction to the book and her increasing fear of failure compared to that book? And like, the more popular that book got, the more unlikely it was that she was going to publish any other books. She didn't like the attention. She didn't like the pressure. But I'm just saying, like, coming into it, she'd already written this book. It wasn't – she didn't even have to think about whether she was going to write it or not. She'd already written it. I'm just saying that I wouldn't necessarily call it excised. I would call it excised if in To Kill a Mockingbird, Scout grows up into a 30-year-old woman, and that never happens. But she's, like, 12 or something at the end of that book, so.
Well, right, but apparently she never wanted to publish this, because she kind of said, oh, okay. That was sort of like a weird – first draft of not the story, but of those characters, I guess. And then she took the characters. Yeah. And then she took those characters and said, oh, okay, here's the important thing I wanted to say. And I'm going to take this other part out and I'm going to put this other stuff in.
I don't know. They lead so naturally into each other. I do think that it feels like something that, that connects.
That's why I wanted context in this goddamn book from the publisher, so that people wouldn't have to have these arguments all day. Because, I mean, how many people didn't see all this crap on the internet and they're just gonna walk into a bookstore or see, you know, oh look, I read that in high school. Here's it. Yeah. All of a sudden, holy shit, what's Atticus saying here?
Right.
You know, that's why I think it deserves the context of the real story.
So there's, you know,
what was your favorite part, Matt? What part worked best for you?
Yeah,
I guess it's actually kind of a weird blend of the two. the themes that Dave's talking about and the way they were tied to location in this, so that Maycomb also represents this time period, and it's in these views and stuff like that, and then New York, which isn't actually in it but is very present in Scout's personality, just the way those were representative of these ideas and the times.
I think that in our 2015 minds, this would be very clumsily handled. But I think in her mind, in Harper Lee's mind, she would not agree entirely with what Dave said about being like the racist uncle that you have to kind of leave behind or accept and unfollow, because she's not saying that this place is all bad. She is and she isn't. She's saying that it's been left behind by time, but she's also saying that it is in its way a great place, full of great people. But they've got this traditional way of looking at things and doing things, and they're having trouble being pulled into the mid-20th century.
Well, that's what I mean. Like the eventual handling of it at the end, that's something that we're going to talk about. But the major theme of it is sort of outgrowing where you came from,
right? And I'll throw out there that the obviously the racism is a big part of it, but what made it so hard for me to read the end and the flawed execution that you mentioned was the sexism. I had a really tough time with the sexism, especially
a lot of that was writing in To Kill a Mockingbird too.
Probably I don't remember it that well.
Maybe not as much, but
so.
Sorry. I need to take a quick 2 minutes here.
Okay.
All right. Be right back.
He's getting so fast at masturbating, isn't he? 2 minutes now, because it used to take like 3.5.
That's so wrong, because it's probably a kid thing, dude.
Oh.
I want to take this moment to announce my candidacy for president.
Oh, you stepped over my announcement of candidacy for president.
Balls McGee is my name on the ballot. If you would throw some support my way.
Is that really a thing?
Not that I know of, but Obviously D's Nuts is.
Oh, D's Nuts. That's what it was. Okay.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I didn't know any other hip-hop songs, so I had to just... Yeah, that, I just love that so much. And also, I think about probably a lot of the people that answered that didn't actually have a sense of humor. They were just like, I don't like these other people. Sure, D's Nuts. Why not? But I'm not going to let that. I'm not going to let that take away the fact that I fucking love that D's Nuts had like 9% in North Carolina.
Yeah. Something.
I'd like to think at least part of that is just fatigue with this whole bullshit.
Yeah, I'm fatigued.
Oh fuck yeah!
When are we voting? A year.
Bernie Sanders is making me a little less fatigued because he seems like legitimately different.
Yeah.
In a way that Hillary Clinton definitely does not.
I don't understand how in this country we have this concept of we left England, we didn't like the monarchy, and now we have these dynasties here where it's like you get a Clinton back in the White House, get a Bush back in the White House. What the fuck is that? Well, like, didn't get enough of their shit the first time around? You got to get more of it just because it's familiar?
Dude, it's just name recognition.
Ugh.
Same reason Trump is getting a lot of votes. I've heard of him.
He's on a TV show.
That's all it takes, man, for like 200 billion votes, man. 200 million votes.
Have you
That's
seen,
all it takes. Name recognition.
Have you seen Idiocracy?
No, but I've seen some comparisons like, oh, we're living it now. Yeah.
It's, well, just, yeah, like the president in that was like, he's a porn star wrestler called like, President Camacho or something like that.
Oh yeah, it's played by
like Terry Crews or somebody like
Terry
that.
Terry Crews, yeah. I should watch that actually.
But just the fact that I know who he is. I've seen him have sex on DVDs. I'm voting for him.
Right. Well, that's a big part of why incumbents tend to stay incumbents.
Right.
Unless they've colossally fucked up. Or the person running against them is Jesse Ventura or something like that, or Arnold Schwarzenegger that you also know the name of.
Yep.
Then it's – and I'm not condemning – like I don't follow politics well enough to know either. But I've as I got older, I just started to only vote for the things that I actually knew anything about and
right.
just one's blank.
I know.
But early in my earlier days, I did kind of just go, well, we didn't die, so I guess we'll stick with this person.
I mean, did you see Predator? You don't want that guy running the state? Are you an idiot?
Shit, Predator had both of them.
That's right.
That's the most successful political movie ever.
Oh, my God.
I forgot. You talking about Bullworth?
No.
No, Predator.
Talking about...
Bullworth is actually about politics.
Yeah.
Jesse Ventura and Arnold Schwarzenegger were in Predator.
So Dave gave us a natural segue. My next question prompt was going to be, so what didn't work for you?
That's a longer answer.
Yeah, it is.
Even though I like the book, that's a more complicated answer.
The end. That's
the end, yeah. Well, yeah. I want to say something a little bit before I say that, because I think this is a good place to stick it. So there is a lot of talk about, and it sounds like you guys agree, that there's this inconsistency between with the character of Atticus Finch, that he was this progressive in To Kill a Mockingbird, and that he's this blatant racist in Go Set a Watchman. Which, by the way, anytime you tell someone, what are you reading, Go Set a Watchman? They don't know what you said. They're like, what? Go Set a Watchman? Go Set? Anyway, so I don't think that's actually true. Part of this is actually in this book, and I buy it. I don't feel like his actions in To Kill a Mockingbird, which are to defend a black man against rape, a rape charge, are inconsistent with him being a racist and feeling like blacks are inferior socially, mentally, that they should be segregated, which is what he believes and continues to believe in Go Set a Watchman, that they're like children and they need to be taken care of like children. And I don't think that's actually at odds. I mean, he is always portrayed in both books as a lawyer, obviously, and as someone who takes the law very seriously. And if you consider black people to be children who need to be protected, how is that inconsistent with protecting them in a court of law against a charge you don't believe that they committed? It's not.
Plus, he just wanted to prevent the NAACP from bringing their lawyers down.
That's not in there. It makes sense, right? I mean, it could definitely make sense. Like, I'm the lawyer here. I'll take care of this. We don't want other people, outsiders, coming in telling us what to do.
Right.
Although I don't know if NAACP was around during the events of the first book, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird. I don't know when they were formed. But anyway,
Jason, I actually think you're right. And I think what's kind of been interesting to watch is that the overall social reaction to this very much mirrors Jean Louise's reaction.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of what she saw in that courtroom was sort of seeing her own views being defended in practice,
right,
less so than explicitly. And so I think a lot of her own morals and views came from that, were shaped by that, but also were already in place and were defined in her own head. And then those morals were sort of taken and laid back on Atticus. Like,
yeah, she could extrapolate,
came up with him, right. You know,
she could extrapolate his motivations based on what she thought that was all about.
Right. Right.
And that doesn't have to be what it was all about for him.
Because that was the inspiration. Then it's sort of a natural, weird human reaction is to take what you end up with and go and put it back on the inspiration. Like, that's where it came from.
Exactly.
It's funny to me that I have such a hard time reconciling this in my mind that this book came first and To Kill a Mockingbird came out of it, because it feels to me like Mark Millar's, like, this is like the Avengers versus the Ultimates. Like, this is like the deconstruction, like, oh, you know, you have the, you know, blah, blah, you know, blah, blah. But actually, Norman Osborn was fucking Gwen Stacy. We didn't tell you that. Yeah, but that was happening in the background. That's our gritty, you know, mean-spirited version of this.
That's what I mean about it being fascinating to me that she could, quote-unquote, forget what she did. When she wrote To Kill a Mockingbird,
right?
because like you, I look at this as kind of a deconstruction of it. Like, I tore down those walls. Now I'm going to write an entire book where the walls are standing.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to acknowledge that they ever get torn down. It is interesting. It's a feat of you know. So what didn't work? Well, I think we all agreed the ending was not the strong part of the book. It was not well executed.
Sorry, when you guys say the ending, can you be more specific? Because I listened to it, so I don't have a sense of like.
Okay. Well, in a way, the ending is everything.
Like after what?
After the meeting she witnesses, but that's about halfway through the book.
Yeah.
But I guess she starts to actually confront her family.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought you meant. I just want to be clear. Like, is it when she confronts her uncle and then she goes and confronts Hank and then she confronts her father? Like that's act.
Yes, I think we all agree that's what we're talking
okay.
about.
Okay.
That's where it starts.
Just want to be clear.
Because the stuff before that, the stuff between her finding out and the stuff, you know, between that and confronting her uncle, I still felt it was pretty strong. And it was also it also didn't yet expose Harper Lee's own not modern now biases. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she's thinking when she sees that, she's disgusted. So she hears this guy talk about, you know, black people in an extremely racist way, sees her father there, sees her boyfriend there, and is just absolutely disgusted and so emotionally overwhelmed, she's like faint, and she's thinking just that is horrific. I can't believe that they believe that way, but she's not really articulating any of it yet about how what she thinks and what the difference between what she thinks and what they think is. And then as she starts to have conversations with her uncle and Hank and her father, I won't put words in your mouth, but I found that she was not quite as far along as I kind of hoped she was. Like, she was not.
Oh,
as,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she was agreeing with things that I would never in a million years agree with. Well, yeah, of course they're, you know, pitiful children and they stink, but you got to give them a chance.
Right.
Which is practically a quote. I'm not exaggerating, you know?
Yeah.
So that was part of what made it so hard to read. That made it hard to read, and the condescending sexist tone of especially her uncle made it hard to read.
Yeah.
And he's portrayed as some kind of wizened gnome of a dude, and he's a dick, right. You know?
Yeah, he totally. Especially when he, like, smacks the hell out of her.
Cold cocks her.
I was listening to that and I was just like, he didn't just do that. That's like a fictionalized, like, nope, he, okay, wow.
And it's not a light it's not a light slap.
No, he splits her lip, doesn't he?
Scout is portrayed as being fairly tough, right? She's a tomboy. She's used to fighting with boys. Like, when she's a kid, they're scared of her. She'll ball her fists and beat them up. So you know that when she punched her, he punched her. I mean, he didn't.
And then
it's like immediately, it's like him talking to another, you know, horrible character, her aunt or whatever. I don't remember her name, but. And he's like, oh, I just need time to recover. I haven't punched a woman in a long time. You know, like, oh, well, we're feeling sorry for you now. Okay, whatever.
That hurt my hand, bitch.
Right.
Alexandra was the
this
aunt.
Made me feel decidedly ungentlemanly.
Is this the same uncle that was so well-read and spewed all the
Victorian? Yeah, the doctor.
Yeah, okay.
The guy who would, like, quote four people in one paragraph.
Yeah, Uncle Jack.
Well, yeah, he's the one who sets her straight in the end, right?
Supposedly.
Yeah, he set her straight right in the mouth.
Right. He's got to knock some sense back into her.
Jeez.
And then sit her down and tell her he's got to mansplain when she's wrong.
God.
Yeah. Well, you know, women, they get so emotional.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Okay, so
she was getting ready to take off and leave that piece of shit postage stamp of a town behind.
I also had trouble with her obvious bullshit about, like, I don't even see color. I had to go to New York, and I don't even notice when there's a black man sitting next to me. She is quite obviously racist still.
Mm.
She doesn't want to be, like, she's trying. And
what was the quote? Like, I didn't even notice that I was sitting by a big fat Negro until he got up to leave the bus or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh my God,
something like that.
Like, you're so progressive.
There were a bunch of places, like when she starts arguing about the Supreme Court decision,
yeah.
Which I'm assuming they're talking about Brown versus the Board of Education.
Yeah.
The states' rights one?
What are you talking about? Yeah. She never explicitly names
yeah.
the court case, but I assume that's what she's talking about.
About integration.
Because that's what led to desegregation.
Yeah.
So when she starts going, I just didn't like that those Yankees were coming and telling us what to do.
Right. How did you feel, Jean Louise, when you heard that? Tell the truth. Oh, I was angry. Yeah.
Right. You're like, okay. Yeah. So my big problem with the ending, for sure, or one of them, was that it ended up boiling down once again to the fate of an entire race of people being about white people's feelings. And how are we going to deal with this? How are we going to make this work in our family when you think this way and I think this way?
Right.
So, absolutely the most powerful and interesting to me scene of the novel is where
she goes to see
Calpurnia.
Yep.
Yeah. Calpurnia. That was gutting.
Which is uncompromising. Yeah. That's an interesting contrast because there's no indication there. Or after that, that kind of point of view is coming through. That, you know, she basically, Calpurnia doesn't want to hear about how it hurts white people's feelings.
Yeah,
right.
And then, and from a writerly perspective, from Harper Lee's perspective, she seems to acknowledge that. She seems to think that's perfectly valid. You know,
yeah.
She doesn't. She doesn't kind of have them make up or, oh, I know you actually love me, sweetie, or, you know, whatever bullshit. There is none of that. She is just. And
let me fix you some grits.
Yeah, right.
She doesn't refer to Calpurnia as, you know, any of those kind of throwaway reductive terms. Doesn't call her stubborn or you know, bullheaded or anything like that. It's just, it is what it is. Like, you know, things have gotten nasty and she knows that the white people there, even if they're supposedly her friend, aren't, because they still look at her as like, oh, like you just said, that, you know, their first allegiance is how it's going to affect them and what their feelings about it are.
Mm-hmm.
So that is interesting. I agree. That was a good scene.
Yeah, I love that scene. But then, you know, particularly the hesitation. You guys know what I'm talking about. When she asks her, did you just hate us all those years? And she hesitates before she says no.
Uh-huh.
That was masterful, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because... And like you said, it didn't come to a pat conclusion one way or the other. It was just sort of like,
yeah.
it's a complicated feeling that she's having. But then that's the last we see of Calpurnia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And the rest of it becomes about Jean Louise's heartbreak over her father not being what she thought.
Which I think is okay. Because, you know, you don't have to – that is the that is the point of the book.
It isn't. It that's where the themes sort of get in the way of each other, and I think that might be why that part of it was taken out of To Kill a Mockingbird, because you kind of had to pick one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, it's this political thing that's just you're picking a political issue for them to disagree on in order to have this disagreement between them, and so she picked something that was, you know, du jour. So if she wanted to make this larger point about actual race in America, she kind of had to take that part of it out, I think. So I understand that part, but I still found all that stuff pretty fascinating and interesting.
Yeah. I also thought it was interesting, and true, at least true and definitely in the book, Henry, She's angry at him and for his tacit support of these racists. And he tells her, well, that's easy for you to say because you're a Finch. And so for you, a certain amount of, you can get away with saying a certain amount of things and you're still going to be part of that family and you're still going to be part of this town But I'm looked at as white trash and always will be. And anything that I, any stature that I gain in this town is fleeting. Mm-hmm. You know, if I, mm-hmm. if I cross people, if I do anything to alienate them, I'm done. You're not. And I think he's right.
Yeah.
I think he's absolutely got that. I mean, whether or not she disagrees, she says, well, that's bullshit. I don't think it is. She also says, well, what's more important, being, you know, doing the right thing or you're standing in this town? And you could argue, you know, that she's right about that, that maybe he, if he really disagrees with the way the people think, you know, that he shouldn't pretend to go along with it and just to be successful in the town. But I don't think she's right about, you know, I think he is accurate in his characterization of that.
To be fair, Jason, she is 26. So, you know, typical 26-year-old's pretty full of themselves and, you know.
Can't see the what? What are you trying to say?
I'm just saying self-absorbed, self-righteous 26-year-old, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing we should talk about, because there were, even though my own views are most accurately reflected, not completely, but most accurately in Jean Louise, she is obnoxious.
Yeah,
I mean, let's be honest here. She's fucking obnoxious in those confrontations.
Yeah, kind.
She's telling them what they need to hear, but the way she's doing it is obnoxious. She's cutting them off. She's not letting them speak. She's not asking them what they think first. She's just saying, "I saw this and fuck you."
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, "Whoa, back up."
I think she's probably most like that with Henry.
Yeah.
But yeah. Because she pretty much just comes out and says, "Yeah, by the way, stupid face, I'm never marrying you." You know, right. without really getting into first like why he was there or
right.
I do agree with you on him. I think that's less so with the others. I mean, she's almost, she's still, you know, yes, sir. Thank you, sir. I understand, sir. You know, but is she obnoxious?
The self-righteousness is obnoxious to me.
Well, that's what they're telling. So you agree with them, because that's why he punched her, for one. You know, it wasn't because of what she believed. It was that they told her basically, you're self-righteous. You're too full of yourself. You're not. At one point, her uncle calls her a bigot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's bullshit.
He says, "You're the only bigot. You're the only bigot around." And she's like, "Excuse me?" You know. But how he defines that is that her beliefs are so all-encompassing that she's not willing to let other people have their beliefs, and that's self-righteous. I mean, she's feeling a moral superiority, and she's acting like it. Like, you people are all horrible, you know. But I don't. I can see your point. I don't know. I'd have to.
I get it's sort of the way, and like you said, it's mostly, I think, in when she's talking to Henry, where, you know, where he starts to get into, like you said, the stuff that he says, in a lot of ways, is true. It's not, it doesn't excuse it really, mm-hmm. but he's saying true things, that he comes from, you know, white trash, and there's this bigotry against him because of his family, and there's
right.
things that he feels like he has to do in order to get along in the town and make his way. And she's not taking any of that into account. She's just sitting there going, nope, you know.
Right, and not only that.
And that's obnoxious.
He's genuinely hurt by it. He's like, right. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Jean Louise, what should I do?
Mm-hmm.
What would be, I've worked all my life to get to this position. I have never been anywhere but this town. What would you have me do? And she's like, well, I can't tell you what to do, you know. Which is, I guess, true, but he's definitely not coming from a position of like he knows what's up, and mm-hmm. he's acting pretty helpless. He's like, fuck, I know this is wrong, and I love you, and I don't want to, you know, I don't know how to reconcile this. Help me out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is a little brutal because given that.
So that's what I mean by she's kind of obnoxious in her self-righteousness. That's nowhere near as obnoxious as her uncle is.
Uh-huh.
Oh God, he is terrible.
When so he sits her down and explains
about everything.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right, why she's a bigot, which was that's the oldest fucking ridiculous argument in the history of the world. Well, you're the one who's being a bigot because you know you get it, and you're like,
he won't let
okay.
us be bigots.
Right, yeah. The what is implied in the word bigot is not that we are not going to tolerate bigotry. Okay, you jackass.
Yeah, he's insufferable, and of course, so is her aunt. But she's like, there's like a character like her in every single Southern novel I've ever read.
Yep.
Yeah, sure.
And
so she's straight out of Faulkner.
She's straight out of Faulkner. She's from, in fact, she's literally straight out of Faulkner. Right. Exactly. She's the same character.
Yeah.
And
she's coming straight out of Faulkner.
This, you know, starched old white lady. And it's almost I don't like her. I wouldn't want to be around her. She's full of shit. But those characters have a way of almost being it's you feel sorry for them more than you dislike them. Because she is of a time, which is not this time, or that time even. And she's kind of pathetic. She's hung up on all this shit. She's not smart enough to change her ways, you know, even if she was willing to, which she's not. It's just almost more annoying in Jack because he fancies himself this intellectual. And he lays out this long-ass digressive explanation to her about, you know, why everything is what it is. And it's just all crap.
Mm-hmm.
And to put that much thought and that much, you know, into that is worse.
Yeah, his fucking parables and homilies and stop it. Just stop it. And she keeps trying to get him to stay on fucking point.
I know, he won't do it.
He's like, well, if you insist that I actually talk about what you want
to
talk
about.
I wanted
him to get on point.
I'm going to have to punch you in the lip. You fucking asshole.
Yeah,
so I think any scene that in which he's involved is the part that I didn't like.
Good answer.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed because I thought the fact that he wasn't at the meeting and the way we had heard about him, you know, she actually had a high regard. She obviously had a high regard for him, but we hadn't really met him. We'd mm-hmm. seen very little of him at a certain point. I was pretty disappointed that he was on board with all the, you know what I mean? I thought maybe he was going to be an actual voice of reason of some sort. Maybe not completely agreeing with her, but
I expect him to be more of the mediator between the two.
More of a mediator.
Yeah, I mean, that would be
he goes so far as to call, like, he has a meeting with her and then calls Atticus. Like, it's like a scene from fucking Rosemary's Baby or something, you know?
Yeah, didn't that end a chapter? Like, she leaves and mm-hmm. then he picks up the phone. Like, what the fuck is...
Ominously, right. Yeah. Like, they're going to go grab her in the paddy wagon and put her away before her evil anti-racism ideas can spread.
But right, instead of being the mediator, instead he like sits her down and tells her why she's wrong.
As constantly as possible.
Right.
And I'm educated, so what I'm saying actually matters.
Exactly.
So, and what you need to do, your opinions are all right, but what you need to do is you need to shepherd the rest of this town and be patient.
Oy.
That's what's important. Is making sure all these bigots' feelings don't get hurt. Well, all the people whose bullshit decisions their lives are affecting suffer.
May I go?
Sure.
So for me, I have to echo your same things. The last act of the book just breaks down into a bunch of monologues or, you know, some type of Socratic, you know, brainwashing, whatever the hell they're trying to do. But, I also took issue with just the general construction of the book being very clunky. The tone was totally inconsistent from one chapter to the next. I mean, there's some like satirical things, like the coffee that Alexandra throws or whatever puts on for her, and kind of, you know, picking fun at this small town kind of stuff. And then it would then you go to a flashback of this kind of like, I don't know if it's cliched at the time, but like the whole falsies at the school dance and these kind of like, you know, wistful, like, the old days, blah, blah, which was a weird, really long-winded way of saying Atticus taught Hank how to reason legally. That was the punchline of that. I was like, okay. But it just seemed really clunky to me. I thought there were great moments in it. Parts of it were really good. Like, I love the Calpurnia scene. I love some other scenes, but it just... it just felt like it was just all over the place. I mean, it's obviously a first draft, so I don't know how, you know.
Well, people keep saying that, but why is it a first draft?
Well, this was the manuscript that she submitted to the publisher that was purchased. And then they said...
Right, so why is that a first draft? That's not what first draft means.
Okay.
It could have been her 20th draft, for all we know, but it was the first manuscript.
Well, it never went through the editorial drafting process. It was never professionally edited.
It didn't?
No, this was...
No, because once that happened, that's when To Kill a Mockingbird came out. That's what came from that process.
Okay, and it was never subsequently edited either?
No.
I mean, it feels very polished to me. It doesn't feel like a first draft whatsoever. But...
Well, I don't know. I agree with what Matt's saying about it, the clunkiness of it. Like, some of those flashback scenes have nothing to do
with it. Oh, no, I do too. I'm sorry. I wanted to be clear about the first draft thing, because I've heard a couple other people say that. I heard, you know, Rob mention that.
No, I don't mean like spelling errors and crap, but I mean like the overall construction of the novel. There are things in there that are just like, well, that doesn't belong. We can take that right out. we can move that around. We could tighten it here. We could, you know, there's a bunch of stuff in there. But
I don't mind the book having a lighter tone in places, as it does. I mean, it certainly tries to be funny. Usually it was successfully funny to me when it was just kind of in her narration and in the, you know, as part of the flow of her commenting on things. She has some reasonably funny ways of describing certain things. But then there are those parts, and Matt just mentioned the lengthy flashback to her school days when the underwear was run up the flagpole, where... it's like a comedy skit all of a sudden. And a lot of those sections, they end with a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like fade to black.
Ba-dum-bum-ba-dum-bum.
Yeah, you hear that sound. And it's like somebody who tells a joke and then just sits there like Fozzie Bear. It's like, eh? Eh?
Waka, waka, waka.
And it's really, I mean, it would be out of place for me like anywhere because it's really not very good. But it was weird to interject in this otherwise serious book with serious themes, and it's kind of it feels more like it's like the Killing Mockingbird stuff. Like, she did want to have some kids adventure, Judy Blume.
Well, yeah, and it had a function, right? I mean, like that's the Halcyon days of youth. I mean, that's kind of, you know, contrasting with her adult view of the town. So I understand why, but it just the tone felt weird to me. Just jumping
the idealized aspects of it, and then. Contrast.
It's like Dandelion Wine took ecstasy and was wandering around touching himself.
What did you guys think overall of her relationship with Henry?
I thought it was all right.
I thought it was really kind of all over the place.
Yeah, and I felt bad for him because it felt like she was with him out of habit or just because of familiarity and had no serious feelings for him, but then at times she did. It was just really weird.
Yeah, it was just really, and that sort of, and that might be why I found her dressing down of him at the end a little bit more obnoxious than everybody else, because there was no idolatry being stripped away there. She's just sort of,
he's just hopelessly like, devoted to her.
She could, right. He's following around like Matt's black lab.
Yeah.
And like, she could take or leave him at any point in the book. So it really had nothing to do with with the self-righteousness.
I don't think so. I mean, yeah, it's definitely open to interpretation, but I don't think she could take him or leave him. I felt like she felt pretty close to him, but in a her feelings were complicated because it was like a brotherly way. She grew up with him. When she was a kid, she had no interest in boys or sex or being a girl or any of that kind of stuff. And he was one of her friends, palling around from youth. I think she did She had a crush on him briefly. She did kind of look up to him. He was the one that came up with the whole plan with the underwear. But as an adult, she wanted to get out of this town. She moves to New York. And then he is a comforting part of her childhood. He's a good person that she wishes that she was madly, passionately in love with, but acknowledges that she's not, but thinks that maybe I'm being rash and maybe that's good enough. Maybe that him being a reliable, good person is enough. And then she decides, when she sees what she sees, she decides that, well, he's not even necessarily a good person. Well, and you're right, she's not madly in love with him. So she doesn't have the kind of rose-colored glasses that people who are madly in love with people have, and they can overlook things. And
Didn't they allude to the fact at one point that she might just be interested in him because he's a little Atticus, essentially, and that kind of like girls grow up and marry their fathers kind of thing? Did that come up, or did I just imagine that?
That's how I made a comment. I saw that in there. Okay. I saw that in there, for sure.
I feel like I don't know. That almost might, to me, that would make sense almost being the opposite. Like, he wanted to become a little Atticus to get her affections.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
Huh. So can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. Knowing that this was written first, was it weird having a gem-sized hole in this book where just this absence of this character that became so important in the final one? It just felt weird to me, just Jim's ghost kind of hovering around these flashbacks and in the present time. Mm. It was just weird. Mm. I don't know. I didn't know what function it served in this book.
How recently have you read To Kill a Mockingbird, Matt?
It's probably been 15 years.
Okay. It's been a long time for all of us.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I thought maybe you'd read a lot more recently. I didn't feel his absence so much because it's been so long since I've read the book.
Well, no, I mean, like Jim is dead when she first shows up into town, and so, but he comes up repeatedly in all these flashbacks.
So Matt's asking what's the point of that?
Yeah, even just reading this in a vacuum.
What function?
Yeah.
Why is he in there at all? Why was the character introduced?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think about it now.
Does he represent just the past and her childhood? So functionally, so you kill him, and that now that's dead, and you can't go home again? In some kind of way, or
does he die in To Kill a Mockingbird, or does that
he died like 5 years ago in this story.
Okay,
yeah. Of a heart condition.
That's a really good.
I don't know. Part of it feels almost like an unnecessary contrivance, because there has to be a reason why she might have to stay at home with Atticus, and then all the stuff with her aunt. Where she stays and all their conversations about it. But I don't know. That feels unjust, because I do feel like maybe he serves some other purpose. But I don't know. You're right. I hadn't thought about it, mostly because he's in To Kill a Mockingbird. So I just thought of, oh, yeah, because... And I was more upset that Jim had died. Like, oh, no! But I never thought about, yeah, if this was the first... draft of that world, why is he even in there?
Yeah. Okay. Just thought maybe you guys had
thoughts. Yeah, I know. It is a good question.
Thank you.
I don't know if at any point, I can't remember if at any point she expresses that she wishes that Jim was around so she would have someone to, a sibling to deal with these family revelations with, but actually, I don't remember her thinking that.
I don't either.
Mm. Maybe he's maybe it's symbolic, you know, the whole "you can't go home again" thing. The past is dead. He's dead.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think that's the only thing that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Any features in all of the flashbacks? So,
right, which again
makes sense.
Yeah. Okay.
It didn't. There is no angle of like his death having changed anybody, like. Atticus or anything like that. So
yeah, and I think Atticus even says like, "You got to get over it, move on, girl," like or something. Somebody does. Maybe it's Alexandra. I can't remember, but somebody's like, "Yeah, get over it, dude."
Right.
Okay.
And interesting. They also made the point of saying that Calpurnia was torn up by his death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very, right? Like the most.
Yeah,
yeah, the yeah. most.
She seemed to be more, much more so than Atticus ever should.
That's pretty par for the course, though, in all of these. Yeah. You know, where the black nanny basically raises the children. And it's said that that's said many times that she considers, you know, Scout considers Calpurnia basically her mother because mm-hmm. she basically raised her. She was the mother figure. And yeah, they're always supposed to be broken up about the deaths or the waywardness of their white surrogate children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So should my wife Renee read this?
Because is she asking that question too, or
this is her?
She's been asking you.
To Kill a Mockingbird is her favorite book ever.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just been kind of like, you know, reading stuff online, and kind of like, huh. I don't know if she's gonna like this, and then I
right.
check the book out, and I don't know.
I guess.
I guess it depends why it's her favorite.
I think it's the same reason it's a lot of people's favorite books. Just she read it when she was in high school, and it, you know, really affected her. And
yeah, she idolized Atticus, and
yes.
she would go through the same shit that Scout did.
Yes, she
wouldn't even be able yeah. to talk to him.
Yes,
right.
That's what I'm
maybe
wondering.
Not.
Like, yeah, I think she can. She should probably skip it.
Yeah,
she's had.
That's tough. I would almost say. She should definitely not skip it for that reason, but I know what you mean. But knowing that it's out there, isn't that worse? I mean, like, you know what I mean? She's not going to be immune to knowing what people are saying about the book. Mm-hmm. And so she's already going to have this, that gnawing at the edges. Like, Atticus is not who I thought he was. It might be better just to kind of confront it head on and find out what it really says and...
It's true, man. You can't buy a set of the Godfather movies without them putting three in there.
Nah, just ignore that one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
My opinion is skip the Ultimates and just read the Avengers. I like the more sweet, sentimental, naive kind of book that it became.
So not just the Avengers, but the Avengers from like 1960. Or
yeah, exactly.
I'm guessing today's Avengers are probably not sweet. And I don't know though. Can't say I actually know.
Yeah. Yeah. So what else do we want to say?
Oh.
What happened to Boo?
Yeah, where's Boo Radley, man?
Interesting.
Did he move away? I mean, she never talks about him.
He didn't exist. See, it's like a time travel story. It is like parallel universe.
You called it a parallel universe, yeah.
Yeah.
In this one, there's no Boo Radley.
Yeah, he was apparently invented for To Kill a Mockingbird.
Huh. So I feel like not only do I want to watch the movie To Kill a Mockingbird again, but I really want to watch The Night of the Hunter, and I don't know why, but I do.
The Robert Mitchum movie?
Yeah.
Because that's very funny because. I was sort of, instead of thinking of Gregory Peck, since this was such a different Atticus than I remembered, I had Robert Mitchum cast in my head as Atticus.
There you go.
Oh my God. He's Atticus is barely in this. That's kind of interesting structurally. Like he doesn't really show up or talk or do anything much until the very end. And so he kind of in the way that he looms over her life as this mythic figure, so does he in the book.
You know,
we're not really dealing with him directly for the vast majority of the time.
It's true. Jerk. Hey, I got no problem with him. I just don't want him in schools with my daughter.
Oh, jeez. I wish he'd
I'll take that case, all right.
I wish he had written more books.
So
I feel like that was... That's unfortunate
because
I think there is it's gonna have a very complicated relationship with people and people that love To Kill a Mockingbird, but it's not a worthless book by any means, and it's very well written. She was she was a good writer, you know, and she was willing, whatever kind of odds we may take to some of the things that she says or how she executes it. She was someone who in the late 50s was willing to deal with some of these things. Mm-hmm. And it would have been really interesting to see if she'd continue to write books over the next couple of decades I wish she had.
She might have had a As I Lay Dying in her, or you know, Sound of the Fury.
Maybe.
She just wrote Mosquitoes and stopped. What the fuck is that?
What? Mosquitoes? Did you just call this Mosquitoes?
Okay, it's better than Mosquitoes.
It is way better than Mosquitoes.
Flags in the Dust. Whatever.
I think it's more of a, I think she's As I Lay Dying level, but I don't, whether she would have had a Sound and a Fury in her, I don't know. That's, yeah.
Not everybody does, Bub.
Not most people do.
Yeah. I had one more question. Oh, so did you guys make anything of the fact that in the first draft, there's a very similar case that's alluded to like in one line, which is he defended a black man on a rape charge with a white girl, but the guy had one arm and he got him off. And then in To Kill a Mockingbird, he loses a very similar case, which I'm sure is... I thought it was an interesting choice to go that way, to make him, in the final draft of this story, to make him lose that case. It's like Rocky.
It
completely went past me. I don't know what that is. Oh, where he loses first, and then... I don't know. I don't know if that was an attempt at humor, like, you know...
Well, it just seemed like it was like just a way for her I mean, I thought that was to illustrate the fact that, you know, this town's so racially divided that they wouldn't even want to look at obvious facts that like that would acquit this guy. And then also having him win that and get the kid acquitted is like, see, and he's not a racist because he got this black guy, you know, acquitted. So... obviously, blah, 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 which kind of sets him up as the idol.
Yeah, oh, yeah, well, it does, yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know, chef a robe.
I just didn't know that. I didn't know the story changed. That went right past me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, so wait, and you're saying in To Kill a Mockingbird, he lost it?
Yes.
The one-armed guy?
Well, he's not one-armed in To Kill a Mockingbird. But the same thing, a black man, a white woman accusing him of rape, Atticus taking it on, and the town wanting blood, that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right, right. Sorry, I got mixed up.
That's okay.
I don't know how. It's very simple.
I don't know whether you're trying to confuse me or if you just hate me.
A little column A, a little column B.
That was weird. Anyway, so, okay. Anything else? Anybody? Closing thoughts?
Dave?
What else is
close there? Your thought.
Okay. I really liked the book for the first 4/5 of it, and I think like around the last fifth of it is where it just started to unravel. But that does not make it a not worthwhile read. Just because I didn't necessarily like the conclusion she came to, and I didn't even think that they were completely illogical so much as just sort of like, shut up. Just because I have these arguments on Facebook. I'm sick of them. Anyway, so yeah, it was definitely worthwhile. There were a lot of really interesting themes that, like I said, resonated with me even more so from a modern context and from an adult context. Than To Kill a Mockingbird did in a lot of ways. That was, I think, inarguably the better constructed overall novel. But there are definitely parts of this where I was thinking, holy shit, this is better.
Harper Lee spent 50 years setting up the most incredible metatextual troll of all time, because people's reactions to this book directly parallel Scout's reactions to her own father. We put Harper Lee in To Kill a Mockingbird on a pedestal.
Wow.
Romanticized it. And now she's showing that she's not, you know, our real heroes, our literary heroes. They're humans. They're capable of failing. They're not perfect. And she's
shit the bed.
She's telling us all to get into the car and not worry about hitting our heads.
Well, block your mouth while you're at it. Because Uncle Publisher is going to come and bitch slap you.
Harper Lee, Atticus Finch, they are all just people trying to do the best they can.
Did you guys, were you aware of a lot of the controversy surrounding this? The announcement of the publishment?
I ignored any controversy. Okay.
So a lot of people were claiming... Okay, go ahead.
I just heard a little bit that she didn't necessarily... She wasn't the one that decided to publish this.
So she had a sister who was her caregiver and was very protective and kept people away, you know, the drug dealer keep her aware, all that kind of stuff. And that's a random Simpsons reference. So she died a couple years ago. And I guess like her age or someone, her attorney or something, said that she found this in a safety deposit box in like 2007 and thought it was something else and discussed it at some family picnic or something. And someone said, oh, no, that's a first draft. And so it sat around for a while in that box. And then people kind of cried foul when within the months after the sister died, there's this push to get this edited. Published. So, I don't know. That was all the controversy was. It was kind of like, what do you call that? You know, when you're working an old person for money, that kind of thing. but it was officially investigated, and they said that there was no substance to those claims.
It seems like her dying would remove some of that issue, not add to it.
Well, like, I mean, just the idea that the sister was, like, the one saying Harper wouldn't want this, you know, she might be a little demented, she might whatever, but we're not doing
this. Oh, she was protecting her.
Yes, and then once she died, it was just kind of like, all right, so, guess what's coming out next year?
Right.
maybe she's the one that didn't want it, and Harper all this time was like, come on, sis. And she's like, nope, you sit in that chair, I'm not telling you where the door is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, see, this is why I...
What's that movie with
of the lack of context in the book.
Yeah.
You know?
The other...
Because there's so much stuff that you see around on the internet that has swirled around, and I have no idea what's true and what isn't, because I saw 8 different versions of that story you just told. And, with different details and all of it. And I think it's a bit irresponsible of the publisher not to put in a bit of context and just release this like, hey,
well,
here's a new book. It's the sequel.
Yeah, and, Dave, you know, that was like, yeah. That's the other thing is that they were very clearly marketing it as a sequel to Kill a Mockingbird. They used those words.
Yeah.
And so there was even a bookseller who was offering refunds to people because people felt duped and they were calling it exploitative and shameful.
I have the hardcover. I'm sure this is what the hardcover looks like. It just says, it says author of To Kill a Mockingbird. And say sequel.
No, and their marketing materials, like the press releases and stuff like that, it was referred to as a sequel to.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
But people can't read the book on their own. They can't.
Well, they can't. It's how they're marketing it. They're coming out and saying they're presenting it as though this was written after To Kill a Mockingbird as a sequel by Harper Lee.
Mm-hmm.
None of that's true.
Yeah.
Mm.
You could technically make a case and say, okay. I just think it's, especially with all the other stuff, all the legal stuff, you know, the reason it wasn't released, you know, the history of how it was rewritten, it was and became To Kill a Mockingbird, the differences between the two, like, there's a lot of stuff that swirled around all over the place, and I just personally would have appreciated like a foreword or, you know, an editor's passage or something like that saying, here's the context.
Yeah.
You know, so for when you read this book.
I guess.
I agree totally, Dave. I think just throwing it out there, marketing aside, just throwing it out there to the ages without any kind of contextual information is kind of lame.
Yeah.
Hmm. Whatever happened to Baby Jane? That was the one I was trying to think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was Harper Lee and her sister. That was the movie version of their life.
which one served the rat?
Harper Lee was Baby Jane.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, misleading marketing materials, I didn't see any of them because I heard this book was going to exist, and then I tend to ignore, just like I do with a movie that's coming out or whatever else, I don't want to hear about it from a bunch of people who don't even usually know what they're talking about for 6 months before I enjoy it firsthand. That's just me. So I pretty much did ignore that. But yeah, misleading marketing materials, if that's how they were selling this and touting this, this is a sequel, that is misleading. And that's giving context that is the wrong context.
Yes, misinformation.
I know what you're saying, a forward would have been fine, but I can also kind of understand if they wanted to just let this book exist on its own without baggage. And I don't know about the marketing materials, but just holding this book in my hands right now, not reading any ads, it just says a new novel set two decades after her beloved prize-winning masterpiece, To Kill a Mockingbird. And then it's just allowed to be its thing. It's just allowed to be a book.
Even new novel is kind of disingenuous. It's not a new novel. It was written before To Kill a Mockingbird. They didn't even fucking touch it.
It's new to us.
Well, fuck you, dude. If you missed it, it's new to you in reruns. Like, who gives a shit? Be fucking honest.
No reruns. It's the first time. It's new to everybody. Who read it before? Her agent and
now I'm getting irritated again.
I don't know. They're putting all that baggage around it and contextualizing it only in the context of the other book. That's one way to go, but I can understand not wanting to go that way.
I think it's a greedy cash grab, and I'm
totally
pleased. I'm pleased that it was a book that it was worth reading, and I enjoyed it. But everything else around it is totally sullied.
If Harper Lee really, if she really wanted to finally publish her book before she died, that's fine, but
see, that's the thing.
The publishers, of course, super excited about this.
Blink twice if you want to publish this.
Right, exactly. That's what was going on. There was no big push. My sister was holding me back all this time or anything like that.
She communicates.
I was just being.
I
was thinking of the grandpa in Count of Monte Cristo. Was that didn't he blink like the alphabet or something weird? And then, do you remember that?
Yeah.
And then I saw that one book about, it was like a real life story about a guy who was completely paralyzed and had to blink to communicate. That was quite something. It was that French guy? I'm sure that HarperCollins was super fucking excited though to publish this book. Oh, they knew that was going to be a ridiculous cash cow for them.
Mm-hmm.
It toppled Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows for pre-orders too.
but did they go into Harper Lee's house and pull out her fingernails until she agreed to, let it be published?
No, but it's not that black and white. There's some skeeziness in there, is what I'm saying.
Sure, yeah. Someday, now that I've read the book, maybe I will be more interested in like the story of Go Set a Watchman and how this all came about. But I didn't want it to undo. I didn't want it to get in the way too much of me reading the book.
Yeah, I waited until I was done before I did the research, but still, whatever. You're crazy.
Fool. That it?
That's it.
All right.
Well, hey guys, thanks for. Was this Jason? Was this your idea? Thanks for. I think I just lost Jason.
Oh, we did?
Yeah.
I think it was his idea.
It's true.
Jason,
be back?
Now they wanted me to update.
Oh, God. I was just saying, I believe this was your idea, so I was thanking you for...
Thank you guys for being willing to do it.
Yeah,
it was a good chat.
It seemed like a really good excuse to get back together and talk about a book we could be reasonably sure would not be completely useless, so...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mark all the important moments in literary history together.
Well, you guys have my word. Next Harper Lee book, we're doing this again, okay?
Sure.
And that's a promise.
The one's secretly written by her sister.
Bet you $20 they quote, find another one.
Yeah.
maybe it's actually her sister who wrote both these books. Harper Lee didn't write shit. And so once her sister died... Harper Lee's like, let's go. It's on.
Yeah, I feel like, Dave, I wouldn't be surprised after she dies if it's like that Tupac thing where it's like, there's like four albums worth of stuff, and it's like basically like you to the point where it's just like, yeah, this is his outgoing voicemail message. We just put some beats behind it and just kind of looped it. I'm just trying to get anything we can out of this.
Yeah, there's going to be a book of letters that she wrote.
Exactly.
And, yeah. Mm. Here's her grocery lists.
All right. I'm done being cynical.
Okay. For what, today?
Just during this phone call.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks to the audience, too, for listening to us. I hope that it was coherent.
I hope that wasn't too terrible.
Cogent.
We did over 100 shows. We never did figure out how to properly, speaking of context, we never figured that out. So we knew what we were talking about. But.
Right. But we were never any good at this. And now we're rushing. So, sorry.
All right, boys. Thanks again. It was fun.
Yeah,
it was a good chat.
Jason, do you want to just tack on like where people can find? You already said that, right? Archive.
I just told him to search for things, but yeah.
You got Google, bitch.
That's the lazy way of doing this.
Maybe it'll be in the metadata for this podcast file or something.
Oh, that's right.
In the show notes.
I have to post this thing.
Yeah.
My work is not done.
I'll send it to you tonight.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for talking with me, guys. I had a good time.
Hey, buddy.
All right. Take care.
See you guys.
Listen, yesterday I was just a little boy.
Just a little boy.
But today, look at me, y'all.
I'm a man.
Oh, yesterday, my friends, men were trying to build planes to fly. Oh, but today, it's just another
thing.
Oh, so we say that. Oh, just to say this, things are changing. Say it again. All right. Oh, yeah. All right. Yesterday, I was just a little boy.
Just a little boy.
But today, look at me, y'all.
I'm a man.
Oh, yesterday, my friend. Men were trying to build planes to fly. Ooh, but today, yeah, it's just
everyday thing. Everywhere there, can't you see I'm changing?